Hey, Bert. Great meeting you, man. No, great show.
Thank you so much.
Will you do me a solid and just say, I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast?
Sure. You ready?
I'm ready right
ready
now.
Ready right now? I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast.
Thank you, man.
Wait, one more.
We'll get all right, it. Yeah, take two.
Where's the iCamera thing? Right here?
I just got this.
I'm Bert Kreischer. I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast.
I bought a book, too. So.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
That's great. Take care.
Thank you.
This is CBTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast. How are you? God, another abrupt. Sorry about that. That's stupid. It always does that. It always messes me up, too. I like to have that little fade where it just comes in. My voice comes in. The music comes down. So it's not just silence for a split second, but whatever. How you doing? My name's Will Koontz. It is the Homemade Broadcast. Welcome again to another program. I know what you're thinking. Oh, no, not again. Yes, it's that time. Again, I'm doing okay. I almost got hit on my bicycle twice today, crossing the same intersection that I was so the first time I started to see what I have to do is generally I got it planned out pretty good. When I see the yellow light, I make sure that there's cars far enough away that they're possibly not going to start to run it. And I start to cross as the light turns yellow, because what will happen is a lot of times people making left-hand turns, once they get that green light, they're going. If there's no cars in front of them, they don't even check to see if there's pedestrians in the crosswalk, I've learned. So I started to cross this morning, and there was a lady in a Mercedes-Benz talking on her cell phone that I could see across the street, and I was like, this lady's not paying attention. I can already tell this is going to be a problem. So what happened was, though, I didn't get my regular jump that I usually get. I had to wait for the light to be almost green before I started to go. So I did that, and the lady, luckily it crossed in enough time because she was not paying attention. She was on her cell phone and probably missed me by a good couple feet. And then as I'm finishing my cross, already cursing up a storm, a lady in a Porsche coming, I guess, I don't know what she was doing, but I was getting to the other side of that street. She was just kept encroaching up. I guess she was going to make a right-hand turn on the other side, so she wasn't really paying attention either. So one of these days, I'm probably just going to die and get run over. I've been hit already once, and it's terrible. I have, like, it's terrible having back problems at 30 years old. I guess it's fairly common, but if you were like an athlete, and I am not an athlete, so it's not good to be completely sore when you're used to being in pain. It's a terrible thing. But so one of these, hopefully I don't die. I should probably wear a helmet. I'm not going to wear a helmet, though, because I don't want to look like an idiot. And that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make, and it could be my life. Hopefully not. I hope this doesn't get played as like a public service announcement. If I do get run over and die, and then they play this, and then they're like, it all could have been avoided. But today is Mark Etherington Day here on the Homemade Broadcast. He is from Mountain Holler, Red Feather, and Set and Setting. I believe he's actually here right now because I just heard the doorbell ring. So I'm going to go ahead and get the door, and we'll talk to Mark right now. Hang on 1 second. Update, that was Mark. So good. So he's here. Before we get started with him, though, I just got to read my little things. This podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Find out why I love the burger. His name's Sly Bar. One of the Top businesses to watch in 2015. Good beers, good folks. Check out 2061 Central Avenue is where they are located. Tell them I sent you, and they'll throw you out. And also Angelo's, which is located at 536 First Avenue North. Here in St. Petersburg as well, they provide our pizza for us at the open mics every second and fourth Tuesday. We have those. It's a lot of fun. You got a $50 grand prize for the best comedian of the night. It's free. And what else are you going to do on a Tuesday? You know, you could sit at home. And what's on TV on Tuesday? I don't know. Probably nothing, I would imagine. So come out and hang out with us every second and fourth Tuesday at Sly Bar. Eat some Angelo's pizza. Everybody loves Angelo's pizza. They always tell me how great it is, and no one ever saves me a slice. So I'm assuming it is, in fact, fantastic. And you can visit them at saintpizza.com. Best webpage name ever. I don't know how they managed to nail that one down. And their Facebook is facebook.com/saintpizza. So make sure you get yourself some. All right, Mark is standing by, and he will join me shortly, and we will talk about stuff. So hang tight one more time, and through the magic of radio, me and Mark will begin to speak.
Try not to set that on.
All right. Mark's jiggling his keys around. He finally got all settled. He's got a dip in. He's ready to go.
Oh, we might have to cut that out.
Oh, really?
I might try to send this to my mom.
Uh-oh. I mean, a dip of ice cream.
That's right.
That he brought for all of us, chocolate. And we're enjoying it. Rocky Road, my favorite. I can't believe you knew that about me. That's pretty wild.
I looked it up.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's on my Wikipedia that I made myself. So, under ice cream, Rocky Road, mint chocolate chip, right underneath of it.
Ben and Jerry's, right?
Of course,
yeah,
man.
That's what I brought.
Only but the best. Mark, thanks for coming in, man. You were supposed to come in for Gasparilla Music Festival time.
Yeah.
And I kind of still feel bad a little bit because I got a press pass for that. And I told them, I was like, oh, I'm actually going to have one of the artists in your event on my show. And we're going to talk. They're like, oh, great. And then we had to reschedule because things were crazy during that time.
Yeah.
So I pretty much just went and watched Modest Mouse and then went home.
Oh, that's cool.
For the Gasparilla Festival. But I kind of felt a little guilty a little bit.
That's okay.
For my coverage. I don't think they checked. But
no, I feel like a little bit that was my fault too. It's around festivals and especially with Red Feather playing as much as we do. Red Feather played GMF for those listening. But yeah, my schedule just gets so busy and... You know, I do booking for myself as Mountain Holler and then also for Red Feather. So, like, a lot of it's me just at a computer most of the days. And then, you know, I go to the studio at night or, you know, I might have a night job, too, every now and then.
Yeah, you're a busy guy, man. Like, I didn't know because you're in Red Feather, of course, like you said. You do Mountain Holler and you're also in Set and Setting.
Yeah.
So that's three bands. And then I kind of thought I got the jive that you were making a living just doing that. But then you have another job that you said you're heading to Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
And parking cars.
Yeah.
For a week.
Yeah, that's a once a year thing. That's like summer camp. You know what I mean? That's so Rob, who plays bass in Red Feather, I think this year is going to be his like sixth year or fifth year, but he started working it and he's been, since I've known him for about 3 years now, he's been trying to get us to go every year. So finally I went last year. I was able to swing it because I wasn't on tour with Set and Setting and it was unbelievable. We get there Monday, 3 days before the festival starts, and then we leave Monday, the following Monday. So
do you get like the pristine camping spot or do you all the way in forest in the back?
No, what's awesome is that we actually camp in the production area, which is behind the main stage. And we actually, our company has this huge, like 200 person, maybe plus capacity air conditioned, like circus tent. And there's like no windows in there, but it's always kind of lit up. So you never know what time of day it is, but we all run weird hours. So for this year, I'm doing two 12 hour shifts, which landed on Wednesday night or Wednesday morning from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Thursday morning, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So you kind of putz around when you're not on your shift, hang out, usually catch up on some sleep, and then you get, you know, shuttled off somewhere on the compound and start parking cars. But yeah, it's like, it's cool because you know a lot of people from last year and it's a big, you know, it's a big summer camp. We get private showers.
Oh, man,
we get catered meals. Yeah,
that's great. When I went in 2012, I guess, I was completely unprepared. I'd never really even camped before. Oh, so, no. Like, I didn't have a tent or anything. My friend's like, oh, you can use this tent, which I ended up breaking, 2 days in because it was too big for it. And then it rained.
Yeah,
so
of course.
So it just rained on me.
Oh, no.
I brought one pair of shorts because I figured, I don't need to change my clothes. And I just remember I could smell myself. And by that last day, there was five of us packed in a Prius to head back to Florida.
Nice and dank smelling.
Oh, man, was it. It was a mess. And then I just figured, I'm just going to try not to use the bathroom. I know what porta potties are like, let alone a festival where there's that many people and so many porta potties.
Like 90,000 people.
Yeah. So, but then it's like I was drinking beer and then eating like really terrible Chinese food for 3 days in a row.
It's
and
like
thought
fair
that
food.
I could I thought I could manage just not using the bathroom, which was I was a complete fool. So it was a complete disaster.
That's the thing, man. It's like I don't being spoiled because we get catered meals, you know. I'm vegan, so I can like I request the vegan food, so I get little box meals every day I work and that are vegan, and there's a huge like buffet at lunch and breakfast to go in, and there's coffee and tea everywhere. It's pretty fancy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I just remember picking up cups and being like, I hope this is water,
right,
and then just drinking it. I wouldn't go again, I don't think. I would go if I had one of those like tents that they set up for you and showers and everything,
right,
so you could just get away for a while.
Yeah.
Because it was just too much. Because I was, you know, mid-20s then, now at 30... No way, man.
Yeah.
I can't do it anymore.
It's you know, I feel like the older you get, we get accustomed to like living the way that we want to live and being comfortable and going out there. You're really facing the elements, especially on a farm in Manchester, Tennessee.
In the middle of nowhere.
In June, in the middle of nowhere. You know, it can rain at any moment, which that in turn turns the whole place to mud.
Yep.
Or, you know, and it's like 100 degrees during the day, and at night it's like 50 degrees. So you gotta be prepared.
Yeah, that's the weird thing too. I guess that's why you can't really, because why do they do it in June? That seems like the worst time. It's so hot, but then it's cold at night.
Right.
So you're still kind of effed either way, with the weather.
Right.
And it always rains. I think every year it rains.
Oh yeah.
I mean, at some point
last year I think it rained on like Wednesday when we were there, and there's like a trench that runs in the production area specifically for rain runoff, and it was a river. I mean, it was flooding everywhere, and it rained solid for like 2 hours, and we just sat in the office and drank beers with the supervisors.
Yeah, that's awesome, though.
Yeah, that was cool.
Everyone else is just like huddled in their tents, just peeking miserable. Yeah,
I think the way to go, I thought about this too, is like if I get older, because I'm 27, so like let's say I stop working and I just want to go, like I think the best way to get like an RV, get like 10 of your friends and rent like an RV, go up, because the RV camping is relatively closer to the main entrance than like even if you have like the best general camping spot.
Right.
And you know, you can go back at any time, take a shower, sleep in air conditioning.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
It's wash so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, wash your hands. That's
big
something
thing.
You don't think about too when you're out there. And putting hand sanitizer on, there's only so many times you can do that. That makes your hands feel gross too.
Right. And just dries them out.
Yeah.
You know, immediately.
Yeah.
That's why baby wipes. Baby wipes are like the God-given savior
festivals. Yeah, I wish I would have like done some research about what I needed to bring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, thankfully, I went with a bunch of veterans, wily old vets that knew exactly what they were doing, because otherwise I would have been totally, totally screwed.
Just lost.
Yeah.
Sleeping on the floor in a tent.
Yeah. What do I need a tent for? And it's like just sunlight just blistering down on you.
Yeah.
It was tough. But so, Mark, how do you say your last name?
It's Etherington.
Okay, that's what I thought. Just wanted to be sure. You play in a bunch of bands in the Tampa Bay area here.
Yeah.
So I try to do some research. And you're one of my favorites. I've been listening to you forever at The Ale and the Witch and everything you play all around. To me, you're kind of like, because I'm not really huge into music, like local music. But you're one of my, I'll watch you.
Thanks, man. If
you're playing somewhere, I'll stop and watch. So I was trying to think of like questions to ask you or anything, and the only one I really wrote down was, is this life hard? Because you seem to be in this like you're almost there type of thing. Like you got so many different projects going on. You've had some success with all your projects. It seems like you play every night, but still you have to go park cars at Bonnaroo.
Sure, yeah. Well, we don't even get paid for that. Really, really the only job that I have, aside from playing music, is I bar back at Steve's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Saturday night and Monday night. But, yeah, I guess to, like, answer your question, is this life hard? Like, it is, you know? I wouldn't say it's any harder than anything else, but it's hard in the sense that I don't have a boss, so I have to be my own motivator,
yeah.
And I have to be my own organizer, and I'm really bad with time management, or I have been in the past, and that was one thing that I had to learn the hard way, you know? Like, playing in three different projects, that's three different schedules, that's three different, aside from my solo stuff, three different practices, and, you know, that it all relies upon me delegating my time wisely, because I've definitely double booked myself. I've played three shows in one day, you know, played three shows in less than 6 hours, played three shows in three different cities before. It was like 2 years ago, I accidentally overbooked myself for a Saturday. I played a show on a Friday night. Saturday, I played in Tampa and then in St. Pete. And then in Sarasota, and then I played a Sunday show.
Wow!
And I've done that before, like that wasn't the first time, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, it's tough because you don't have a necessarily reliable income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't, like, I don't have a salary. You know, I don't have a paycheck every week. My paycheck relies on me booking myself shows, and you know, with the bands Red Feather and Set and Setting, you know, we don't take money from that. We have band funds. So Set and Setting, you know, all of our money goes aside to pay for merch and touring and everything that involves that machine to run. Red Feather's the same way. We don't tour yet, but we want to. So now we're saving up to buy an RV. And, you know, so once again, we got to pay for merch. We got to pay for studio time. So really my only income from playing music is doing the Mountain Holler stuff. And luckily, because it's just me doing it, you know, I reap all the benefits of the financial thing, and I can play for like 3 hours, and on the rare occasion, but it happens, you know, get paid like $500 to play, which is rad. You
yeah.
know? And I figured out a formula, I guess. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of this like overall faith I have. And every day I kind of wake up and it's like, I write myself a list of things to do, and those to-dos, those, you know, chores, I call them, like musical chores, all of those pertain to the future of me playing somewhere in the distant future, and then in turn guaranteeing that I'll make some sort of financial income.
Mm-hmm.
and I just kind of keep rolling with that. You know, some months are better than others, and you know, if I have a really good month, then the next month, because it's a weird thing, like if I have a really successful month, which means financially I'm playing shows, that means I'm playing a lot of shows. So I don't want to oversaturate people, nor myself. You know, I got to let my voice rest. I get bored. I don't get bored ever. But, you know, like it can become redundant.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a busy month, the next month may not be as busy. So in that down month, then that's when the other things can come up. You know, that's when maybe Red Feather goes in, records a whole bunch, or Set and Setting goes on a tour for 3.5 weeks or anything like that. But the weird, really it all kind of revolves around Set and Setting. I joined and kind of really got things moving with Set and Setting when Shane asked me to play drums when we were sophomores in college, which was 07. And I started driving out every week from where I was living back at home in like Lithia, mm-hmm. Puerto Rico. So, you know, I did that for like 2 years and then moved to Indiana for a little bit, to Bloomington. And then moved back, and we started playing more shows. And then that kind of built up. And that, I wasn't even doing my solo stuff at that point, and it was just all Set and Setting. So long story short, Set and Setting is my first precedent. You know, whenever we have a tour, everything else kind of stops, and Set and Setting takes charge. And then because we primarily just tour now, I have all this other time to fill it with Mountain Holler and Red Feather.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balance, you know?
Yeah, you're getting ready to go out on tour with Set and Setting, right?
Yeah, we leave August 23rd.
So what's that schedule going to be like?
That one's going to be cool. We're doing a week with this band from Arizona called North. They became buddies of ours over the past couple of years. We did a few dates with them last year on our last tour. We did like a Midwest, Southeast tour, East Coast tour. So we're doing our first week with them. they're actually going to be in town with us playing our tour kickoff show August 22nd. And I believe that got moved to the Orpheum in Tampa. It was going to be at the 910, but we're going to move it to the Orpheum, playing with Atlas Moth and one other band. And then we go up north. I'd have to look at the dates again, but we go up to like New York. And
I think you sent it to me. Yeah, kickoff show August 22nd. And yeah. That's with North, but it doesn't say where.
Yeah, I think I got the flyer somewhere.
So, Set and Setting's your main project.
Yeah.
The other stuff's kind of on the side. Which, you're saying, okay, so I got to book myself dates to play, to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you find time to write new stuff? Because that seems like it's a job on its own, sitting and, writing music.
Yeah, so like, I think with any artists, they go through inspirational highs and lows, you know, peaks of mountains when you're just on this like inspirational kick and everything just seems to flow and come so naturally and organically. And then you hit the valleys, you know, and at first it was a little discerning because I was getting frustrated with not being creative and like not finding inspiration and not writing new material. But then, you know, you realize after some time that it's all a cycle, you know, when the way that I play it out is, and the creative highs, whenever you have it, just go with it. You know, even if you're writing crap, just keep writing it, and eventually something will formulate that you'll keep. You might go through, I mean, I've done it, like, I've written 3 songs, and 5 songs maybe, and one of them ever see the light of day, playing out solo.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the lull periods, you just keep practicing your old songs, you know, or come out with new ways to present the old songs. Like, I started doing a lot of my old Mountain Holler stuff now, which is a new thing I've been doing that I've been wanting to do for a while, is that I rearrange them and recompose them so I could do it with an electric guitar and a bow.
Yeah.
So I do like a bow intro and I loop it, and then I go into certain songs with that loop going and pull the acoustics out and stuff like that. But with with like Red Feather, we... At first, the band started with me bringing songs to the table and being like, hey, I have the song, let's write it as a full band, blah, blah, blah. But now it's just because our drummer, TC, owns Paper Sound Studios along with Stephen Bowman, who plays in Sleepwave. So we spend so much time in that studio. It's like our second home. And we get a lot of our writing done in there when we can. And a lot of it could just be us, you know, maybe a person comes into the practice studio that one night and is like, hey, I got this idea. I have this riff or something, or I have this conceptual idea for a song. Or, you know, I might have something I had written that I want to, it's kind of loosely written that I want to pertain to the full band. Or we just jam, and all of a sudden a song blossoms out of that.
Mm.
It's a really weird process. There's no, like, there's no right or wrong way to do it.
Yeah. Mark Etherington is joining me on the Homemade Broadcast today. He is a local musician, prolific in my eyes, in the Tampa Bay area, Mountain Holler, Red Feather, Set and Setting. So basically you hang out with these guys, and that's because one of the amazing things about people in bands, I feel like bands that make it, you obviously have to be talented, and not really necessarily these days. You could still get signed and not be talented.
Sure, yeah.
But that's a part of it.
Yeah.
And then just being able to group people with those artistic minds and being able to get them to be on the same page,
mm-hmm.
and be like, we're going to practice at this time and not let a girlfriend get in the way or a boyfriend or
right.
whoever. And just everything has to go right to really succeed as a band.
Yeah.
So it's amazing to me. It's crazy to see just people playing music together. They practiced really hard on, spent long hours together, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. It really is like a, you know... It's like anything, you know, when you have a group of people together pursuing a certain goal, which in my case is a band pursuing writing a song to our standards, which, you know, for Set and Setting and Red Feather and myself musically, our standards are really high of ourselves. You know, we'll write something and be like, oh, that's awesome, and come back the next day and be like, that's not so awesome, let's get rid of that. Or, you know, we play it and it's like, well, we could add this or add this. So it comes down to like, I view it as like a team, you know, like to have a successful, take the Lightning, for example, in a game once tonight. I know this is going to air in a week.
Yeah,
this
will be, I don't know if the even series will be over by then, but maybe Stanley Cup champion,
hopefully,
Tampa Bay Lightning.
Hopefully, bring it back to the Bay. That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome.
But you know, like you got to have a team, and each member has their role, and you have to facilitate and pertain to everyone's role, and really really harness it, and feed it and facilitate it and help it grow. You know, I think that's what makes a band a good band. You know, when you can look at it, and I do it. You know, like I think of going to shows as like that's my research. You know, I studied anthropology in college, so like I love to people watch and I love to analyze and see how people work together. And when I see a good band, you know, that turns me on in a certain way, you can tell it's a group of people just on a different level. You know,
yeah,
what I mean? It's
totally.
Like, it's like a telepathic level, or a, you know, just the synergy's there. And it's, I've been really fortunate just in the circumstances I've been in life and been presented with opportunities to perpetuate me into the places I'm at now with people that it just works. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, knock on wood. I hope you heard that out there. That's me knocking on wood.
That's not wood. I don't
you
know.
Find
here,
some,
use,
some
use
wood.
My head.
There you go.
That's what my dad always did to me. Knock on wood and bang on my head. He's an ass. So yeah, man, that's always one of the things that fascinates me, because I'm kind of the artistic things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to count on anybody else. Mm-hmm. When I started this podcast, it was with a roommate. And we kind of just talked to each other. That's how it started. And sure. Then he had a baby.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, I gotta go. And I was like, I hear you. All right, man. So, when I was, see, this is the only thing where I have to count on somebody else, because
right.
I tried to do this by myself,
mm-hmm.
but my life is not exciting enough
yeah.
to fill up 45 minutes.
Sure.
So that's when I started just, I'm just going to have people in, and it's kind of blossomed into what it is now. And I like, you know, the direction that it went and everything, but it was, it's hard to have to depend on people. I don't like it.
Yeah.
And even like the other things I do, like the comedy stuff, like that's just me too. Or,
sure.
You know, or if I'm organizing, it's all me, and
mm-hmm.
I enjoy that, the pressure, I guess.
Sure.
Like I don't have to, not concerned with anybody else, you
right.
know?
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that like, you know, so for example, like the fact that you started this with your roommate, and you know, life threw him a curveball, or not even a curveball, a beautiful curveball. He had a baby.
Yeah.
I feel like life sets us up for certain opportunities. You know what I mean? Like if you start something with a pure intention, you never really know where it's going to go. But as long as you continue that pure intention and that honesty and that, you know, the generosity that you allow yourself to have with yourself, you know, going after something, it can lead you in certain places that you would never expect. But
yeah, it's scary. It's
yeah.
It's
very, you don't know. You
yeah,
have
exactly.
no idea.
There's always safe ways that you could have went, as opposed to
sure.
following being an artist in
mm-hmm.
some sense. And it's kind of, that's why I asked if it's hard, because
yeah.
for me it's hard.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I feel like, you know, you open yourself up to a lot of criticism,
mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to accept that criticism, or just tell people to go, you know,
yeah.
you know where to go.
Kick rocks.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, you know, it's financially, it's difficult. You know, I could have went and found an insurance adjusting job that
sure.
pays $40,000 a year. I could have been comfortable.
Yeah.
I think I would hate it.
Yeah. Where's the fun in that?
You know? It's not fun.
No.
But the fun would be, now money, of course, doesn't buy happiness. And I agree with that. But it allows you to, it's a tool that you have in your life now,
mm-hmm.
where you can say, I know what I'm going to eat.
Right.
I can go and have a few beers,
mm-hmm.
and maybe get something to eat. I can fix my car.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Take a girl on a vacation.
Exactly.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And that was the thing that was really tough for me starting off, was just being broke. Like the idea of being just the lifestyle of being broke. Now, it comes and goes, because if you're broke for a long time and all of a sudden you get a bunch of money, you now want to spend it.
Mm-hmm.
So there comes the discipline, is saving your money, which is something that I learned in the past like 2 years. I actually became pretty good at, in a respectful sense, you know, no
sure.
one's whatever. But like, you know, I now can put away some money and save up a few $100 and all of a sudden be like, hey, you know, like, my girlfriend and I can go somewhere. We can go camping for a weekend, or we can go, you know, my girlfriend and I at the beginning of of April, went up to Atlanta, Georgia to go see Sleep and Windhand, and we had an awesome little vacation. We were there for one night, but we stayed in this rad hotel, and it was fun, you know, and that's the perks of pursuing your passion. I feel like that's like the reward, you know, I always come down to honesty, you know, because it's, you have to be honest with yourself, and you have to be genuine with yourself in this kind of lifestyle. And you can't ever take anything for granted. And the moment you do take something for granted, it's going to come back and bite you threefold. You know, I really do believe in the philosophy that anything you put out comes back to you threefold. So I use that as, that's like my God-fearing thing, is that I don't necessarily fear that, but I'm very aware of it all the time, you know. And it's helped mold, I think, how I deal with certain situations, you know. Things don't seem as bad as they can be, you know. And with money, it'll come, you know. Like, I've never once thought or decided or believed that I'm doing this just for the money. I'm not. I do it because I love to do it, and I believe it's what I'm here for. And the money will come, you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things that you have to have faith, and it's not having faith, in my opinion, it's not having faith in anyone else but yourself. Now, if you're involved in other people, like bands and stuff, you have to have faith in those people too. So you have to be careful about who you choose to bring into your life, because, you know, energy is infectious, and if someone's full of negative energy, that can have an impact on, you know, the success of anything you're doing in any sort of regard. Even a small project, putting a festival together, forming a band, you know, whatever, it's all kind of relative in that area.
Yeah.
You know?
Mark Etherington is joining me. He plays in Mountain Holler, Red Feather, Set and Setting. So what's kind of the plan? What's next for you? You're going on tour for a Set and Setting, and then what? Or do you even have a plan after that?
Well, before that, I'm actually leaving July 4th, and I embark on my first solo tour with Mountain Holler. I'll be doing that for 3.5 weeks or so, about 20 days. I'm going up the East Coast, playing North Carolina for about 3 nights. Virginia for about 3 or 4 nights now, and then I'm trying to find a show in Philly, and then I'll be playing New York City, and then I'm booking it over to Indianapolis, playing Indy, and then I'm shooting down, which is pretty cool, because I'm going to Owensboro, Kentucky, because my family's 50th anniversary family reunion is in July, so I kind of planned it to land there at that time, because I haven't been in like 4 years,
right?
And it's huge. I have a huge family on my mom's side. So that'll be cool. And then I drop down from Owensboro, Kentucky to Nashville for 2 nights, and then Birmingham, then New Orleans for 2 nights, and I'll be home.
Man, it's a cool trip.
Mm-hmm.
How long is the trip, is that?
It's like 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Yeah, I'll leave the 4th and come back like the 24th.
Living out of a suitcase for 3 weeks.
Yeah, man, out of my Camry. And Rob, who's one of my best friends, he plays bass in Red Feather. He's going to come with me. And, you know, I think it's good to get out. You know, it's good to travel, especially on a road trip, and especially when you have an agenda, mm-hmm. playing shows. So that's that. That's going to be July, and then all through August it'll be catching up financially and working my tail off until, you know, we do our tour kickoff show with Set and Setting on the 22nd, and then we come back, I think, September 11th from that tour. And that tour is going to be up the East Coast and the Midwest.
Yeah, you got June 19th at the Ale and the Witch, yep. which is down here in St. Pete.
That's with Red Feather.
With the Red Feather. June 20th at the, is that at the 910? Is that one still happening?
Yeah. That's the Aquabunga Fest,
right?
Which the 910 kids are throwing, which is going to be really cool.
24th at the Amsterdam down here in St. Pete.
Mm-hmm.
26th at Orbit 19 with Zulu Wave. Where's Orbit 19?
That's at Holiday.
Where's Holiday? Oh, Holiday's North Pinellas County.
Yeah, it's like a... Like,
it's almost Pasco County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Newport Richey.
That is a. I don't know how people drive up 19 and for that long. There.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I went to the Dunedin Brewery, and you have to take 19, and I was like,
"Where is everything?"
It's, well, Dunedin's nice, but like 19, nice. Just that road is just, it sucks the life out of
it's
you.
It's awful.
It really is.
It's really
truly
awful,
and it's not as bad. I remember it was under construction for like since I was like a little kid.
Yeah,
I remember like 10
I've never
years
known
old.
It not under construction.
It's like 25 years or something ridiculous, yeah, like that, and it's still like it's much better, but it's still like screwed up.
Yeah, man, it's like rush hour. Forget about it.
Yeah,
because I drive up to Guitar Center, mm-hmm. which is off Drew.
Yep,
up in Clearwater, and like I'll take Beta Bay, but I refuse to go anywhere anywhere north at like from like 4 to 6.
Yeah, it's a mess.
It's hellacious.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, Orbit 19 is cool. It's just like it's like a hidden gem in Holiday. You're driving and you're like, where's the cool bar around here to play? And all of a sudden there's like a liquor store, and then attached to the liquor store is this bar. And you're like, oh, okay. An unseeming bar, and you walk in, it's this really rad, like modern stylized funky bar, and it's awesome. And like the bar is in the actual bar, you know, where the bartenders serve, is in the middle of the whole place. And so there's like the bar circling the bartenders and the liquor, and the stage areas in the back. So everyone's in the bar and everyone gathers, and we've played there. This will be our third time playing there. It's always fun. Like something always happens, you know. It's always like
Holiday, so, it's probably a pretty unique bunch.
It is. It's really, it's like an eclectic demographic, because you have like a small group of like artsy kids that still live at home.
Yeah.
And then you got like it's like those kids all the way up to like the 70-year-old, 60-year-old like drunkards.
Right.
That come in, or like the drunk moms that come in and like dance to your set. You know, that's happened before.
You gotta love that. Yeah, nothing wrong with dancing moms.
No.
In my book, for sure.
No, that's why we do it.
That's right.
That's not why we do it.
Did you always kind of want to be, like, when you were a little kid, did you know, like, yeah, I want to, like, when did you start picking up guitar and playing guitar?
Well, I actually started playing drums first. Mm-hmm. It was really weird. I've been really into music since I think I knew what music was. There's a story that my mom always tells, usually to my girlfriends, that, like, they're in an elevator and I'm like 2, maybe 3 years old, sitting in a stroller with headphones on, and this little old lady looks down at me. She's like, oh, what are you listening to? And I like pull one ear off of my headphones. I'm like, I'm listening to Elvis. And my mom says she had this like horrified look in her face, but I loved Elvis as a little kid. And like, I don't know what it was, but I loved Elvis. I don't know if it was his like image, his like legend that I fell in love with, you know, the king of rock and roll.
Yeah,
I just loved that idea. So I was really into music from a really young age, and you know, my dad turned me on to Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, the Moody Blues, Zeppelin, Neil Young. He's a huge Neil Young fan, and you know, I kind of took all the Beatles. So I grew up with that, and then my mom was more into like the 80s kind of pop stuff, which was cool. She liked Enya. I really fell in love with Enya.
I think my mom did too, actually. Yeah.
It's like good mom music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still dig Enya.
Sure.
Yeah. So then I got really into that. And then, so I was in Connecticut when I was in like, you know, I was born in Connecticut, but I moved around a little bit when I was younger, came back in third grade. And then in fourth grade, they had tryouts for the school band, and every kid had to do it. It was like an elective. And I really wanted to play trumpet, I think because my dad played it when he was younger. So we'd always talk about it because that was like his relation to music with me. And, you know, I could blow into the mouthpiece or whatever. And the band instructor had all these mouthpieces set out and then a pair of drumsticks at the very end. And I picked up the trumpet. I'm like, oh, I want to play trumpet. He's like, well, you know, try the drumsticks. And I started playing on a practice pad. And he's like, you're a drummer. And I was kind of bummed. I was like, I don't want to play drums. But I ended up being, you know, I ended up having an affinity towards it, a natural talent. And I was in the fifth grade jazz band when I was in fourth grade playing two different snare drums. You know, one had the snare off, one had the snare on. And I, you know, they had like a little drum solo when I was a kid, and I would play really loudly because it's, you know, drums, you got to hit them loud.
Sure.
So then I guess it was the Christmas of my fourth grade year. My mom bought me a drum set, and I just used to sit up in my playroom in the second story of my parents' house, and I would listen to the radio, and I would just blast the radio, and I would just play along, or at least try to, you know, to the best of my ability at the time. And it was kind of from there that I taught myself how to play drums. And my cousin was actually a snare drummer for the Cavalry, or the Cavalier Drumline.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a drum set down in his basement in Indiana, and we had a big family reunion. I went down there, and he wanted me to see, you know, he wanted to see me play drums, because I told him I played. I was probably like 11 at the time, and I was playing, and he told my dad, he's like, that was unbelievable. I've never seen a kid do that without having any lessons, but he needs to use his bass drum more. Because I didn't know like what a bass drum pedal was. So when he told me that, I was like, oh, I'll just use this thing. And then I kind of like figured out where the bass drum fits in the drum set realm of the patterns and the rhythms and stuff like that. And I started playing. So then I started playing drums from the time, you know, I was like 11 until I was 12. So I guess 1 year of me playing drums, I moved to Florida in sixth grade. And I moved to this really podunk, not a podunk town, but I went to a podunk like middle school called Turkey Creek Elementary School. Got in a fight my first day there with like an immigrant kid, you know.
Middle school, you gotta, it's like going into prison, man. Yeah, middle schoolers are the worst people on the planet.
Especially where I went, because it was like, I mean, it was a huge demographic. You know, it was kids from all spectrums of life. So I learned, like, there was like where I got tough, and I was this white redheaded kid from Connecticut, wearing Abercrombie, and I skateboarded and played music. So I played in the school band there, but then my parents took me out of that middle school and put me in Nativity Catholic School. And when I got in as a sixth grader, you had to be an elective, and the only elective open was acoustic guitar class. And my dad had an old acoustic guitar that my mom bought him in the 80s. I didn't want to play acoustic. I wanted to play electric. So my dad bought me this like sweet, small-scale electric guitar that had a speaker on the back. So I was a kid sitting in the back of the class with like the speaker on, like jamming out. And I learned how to play chords and stuff, and that's when I started playing guitar. So it became this really strong part of myself, to where drums were something that I could play alone after I got home from school until about 5 o'clock. I would do homework and eat dinner. And then afterwards, at night, I would sit in my room and play guitar because it was quieter and it didn't bother my parents. And so I kind of, from that point on, I always studied and practiced both of those instruments that way. You know, during the day I would play, and it was always by myself. You know, I tried to pull in other kids to play with me. I started a band when I was in like 7th grade called Nothing Worth Using. It was like a pop punk band.
Did you record anything with them?
Yeah, but it's like lost in the ether somewhere. Yeah. I'll probably find a cassette one day.
There you go. You got to upload that to YouTube. Mm-hmm. When you do.
No, that will never reach. Never see the light of day. But yeah, it was cool, man. Like, I always wanted to play music. It was something that I really liked, the culture of a musician. You know, I liked the mystique of musicians, only knowing them for their music. And then I started getting really interested in the musicians themselves. So I started reading a lot of biographies. But all the biographies I read were from classic musicians. You know, like I read a lot about Jim Morrison, a lot about Hendrix, a lot about Zeppelin. Zeppelin's my favorite band of all time, which Jimmy Page is a huge influence, and Jack White, huge influence on when I first started playing guitar. So it led me down this path of, you know, really just wanting to be the best musician that I could be, playing my own original music. You know, it was a good outlet for me. You know,
music is definitely a gift. I've tried to dabble in it. I had my friend Josh he's really good at math, and I know that's something that has to do with making music. I don't use that side of my brain very well. But he was one of those self-taught, terrific guitar player. So I tried to play with him. You know, I bought a guitar and we would try to play, and he would just be like, here, just do this.
Yeah.
And to him, it was so easy. Mm-hmm. And he was very patient with me, but I could not get the hang of it. I took lessons and like, I know a couple open chords and everything, but it's definitely like a God-given ability that or I don't know, universe-given, sure, whatever you want to call it. It's just a gift, and I didn't really realize until I tried it myself. So
yeah, it's a weird thing, man. Like it was just always something that came natural to me. You know, I could pick up an instrument and just kind of hear. I could look at. I learned how to play drums by watching other drummers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I learned. I can watch someone do something. I can do it. So I always kind of learned through imitation.
Yeah.
And then from that, I kind of developed my own style. And but yeah, it's a really strange thing. Like I was in college studying anthropology at USF, and I just realized that my true purpose in life was to play music. It's what I was best at. And like, you know, you said the correlation with mathematics. I was really bad at math in school, but I think it was because I didn't. Near the end.
Yeah, we gotta wrap it up already. Oh, yeah, man. I know. You come back though.
Yeah,
anytime.
No,
you're welcome.
I'll tell you that story for another time.
Doesn't all right. Matter. Yeah. Give me your social media if you got any, and where people can find you and all
that.
Yeah.
So on Facebook, you can look up all three of my projects: Mountain Holler, St. Pete, Red Feather Music, and Set and Setting are on Facebook. We also have Bandcamp, setandsetting.bandcamp.com, redfeathermusic.bandcamp.com, and mountainholler.bandcamp.com. I'm also on Instagram at mountainholler, which kind of, it's my personal one, but it encompasses all of my projects and everything. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm out there somewhere.
Very good. Thank you, my friend, for coming
in. Thanks, Will. I really appreciate it.
Nice talking to you. It's been a while coming. So
yeah.
Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast. 615, radiosaintpete.com every Sunday. Talk to you soon. iTunes, The Homemade Broadcast.
Peace.
Okay, see ya.